everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Proud to Work in Cannabis podcast. I'm really excited today because first off, I can't believe that anybody in this world is actually inbounding us to come onto our podcast. So our guest today, David Charles, who's the CEO and co-founder of Mood, he has a PR team, and somebody from their PR team reached out to us to have David come onto the show, which, you know, first off, like I said, I can't believe anybody would want to come onto our show, but we're happy that they do. And anyway, in the email, they were talking about how David's company Mood is on track to doing $100 million in revenue this year with no outside investors. It's a hemp-derived THC company that makes products tailored to your mood. Started doing research on David and the product, and it all just sounds super cool. So, of course, I wrote back, and we scheduled David right away. And so, David, it's so great to meet you. I'm sorry we hadn't met before, and thank you for being here today. I can't wait to dig into your story.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Carson. It's a pleasure to meet you.
And now, David, where are you calling in from today?
I am in Oklahoma City, which is Mood's physical nexus, where we have our distribution center, which now has about 85 folks and growing every week.
85 people in Oklahoma City and growing every week. Well, there's so much to talk about. And also, we haven't had any hemp-derived THC companies on before. It's been primarily focused on THC. And I know that this is a category that's exploding. So it's actually perfect that you're coming on. But before we get into everything, because there's a lot to talk about today, let's back up and let's learn. David, I would just love to learn a little bit about your background prior to co-founding and being the CEO of Mood.
Sure. So most of my career, I've been in productized e-commerce, selling everything from pet supplements to human pheromones to kitchen gadgets and everything in between. And then I ventured into tech. I got into telehealth and health tech, and I saw some really interesting opportunities in those spaces. And I really like tech culture as well in terms of ways of working, tenets such as radical responsibility that you see really emerging in a lot of tech culture. But then a previous co-founder of mine and I, he and I were catching up, and he said, "Hey, I've been working in cannabis up in Canada where it's legal, and I think there's a tremendous opportunity to set up a proper e-commerce company with legal hemp-derived cannabinoids in the United States." And I said, you're crazy. This stuff's at every gas station, every vape shop. There's nothing here. And he said, no, let's really look at this, because the stuff that people are selling in vape shops and gas stations, it's terrible. The quality's terrible. The convenience factor is awful because, well, sure, if you want to go to a vape shop, you can get it. It's convenient. But for a lot of people, they like ordering things online, and there just is no good solution. Or there was no good solution. So that's fundamentally what we've set out to do is build a proper e-commerce experience for buying these products online.
Your co-founder who is in Canada, what year did he come to you with this idea, which at the time you seemed to think was crazy?
This was in April of 22, and we went live.
Oh my God. So this is like brand new.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We just launched our website to the public in August of 22. So right now we are 14 months and 16 days old.
So for people listening to this, they launch in August 2022, and this year in 2023, you're on pace to do $100 million in revenue. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable. Clearly you have product market fit. So can you talk to us a little bit about the launch and what happened over the last, almost slightly more than a year?
Yeah. I've always been impatient, to my detriment and sometimes to my benefit. But it's really just been, it's been a marathon at sprint pace the entire time. And there's been so much that has gone wrong and so much that we've been able to learn from. But we just keep pushing and, the launch process, the earliest turbulence was, signed a warehouse lease. We identified that we're not going to 3PL these goods. We want to maintain quality. And in order to do that, we need our own people installed in order to do things like process flour. Flour comes in and just, as a tangent, flour comes in and it looks good, but we want it to look amazing. So our people then go over what the trimmers have already done and they make it as good as possible. Flour in its ultimate form, which, costs time, it costs money. We end up, discarding product that, we otherwise would have sold. But essentially, we wanted the product to be paramount. So set up a warehouse, signed a warehouse lease in Austin, where I was living at the time. And then I think it was 3 or 4 days later, I was up at 1 or 2 just reading a bunch of cannabis industry stuff. And I saw that the state of Texas, 24 hours prior, had just passed legislation that banned the processing of industrial hemp in the state of Texas. You could still sell it, smoke it, possess it, but you could no longer take a pound of it and break it down into eighths. So that was the first hurdle. And, you know, that was on a Friday night. By Monday morning, I was in Oklahoma City and signing a new warehouse space. So it's been a series of many of those.
So I think some people just might be a little bit confused about hemp-derived THC, Delta 9 in general. Could you explain it to somebody that literally might not know anything?
Absolutely. So in 2018, the Farm Bill passed, and in the Farm Bill, what they did is delineate between hemp and marijuana. And they said, okay, all of this stuff is cannabis L sativa, but marijuana is going to have a Delta 9 THC concentration of greater than 0.3% by dry weight. And if it doesn't, then it's hemp, and it's lawful. It's federally legal, no restrictions around interstate commerce, no restrictions federally around banking. And thus, the legal hemp industry was greatly propelled. So the products that we sell all meet these legal requirements. And then the next question everyone says is, okay, but does it get me high? Am I actually going to feel anything from it? And the answer is yes. Here's one example. When people say THC, what they actually mean is Delta 9 THC. It's an isomer of THC that's abundant in the marijuana plant, the marijuana variant of cannabis. But if you read the letter of the law, it deals with dry weight. So, for example, the hemp plant still does grow THC. It still produces THC. You can extract that Delta 9 THC and put it into a gummy. So if you take a 5.5 gram gummy, which is your standard size cannabis gummy, it's a little square. You can, on a dry weight basis, you can put 15 milligrams of Delta 9 THC into that 5.5 gram gummy, and it ends up being 0.27% of Delta 9 THC by dry weight. Now, if you're brand new to cannabis, you might say, well, 15 milligrams, that doesn't sound like much. But no, it is. Your average user is going to be very affected by 15 milligrams of THC. And we have similar legal ways through in our other product categories as well.
And for people that are not, that, you know, or if you're on your phone or in front of your computer, you should go to hellomood.co and you can shop all of the various products that you have, which I want to talk about a little bit, but I'm on the website right now. You have smokable flower, edibles, vape, pre-rolls, concentrates. So, David, what out of all these products that you've launched, which, by the way, it's incredibly impressive how quickly you've gotten this business up with all these products, right now, what are you seeing as the best-selling product or category?
Sure. I'd say it's fundamentally split between gummies and flowers. We find that our customers, they like to eat THC or they like to smoke it. And it's very interesting. We've done a lot of customer research, and we have relatively thorough understandings of why somebody would prefer a gummy over a flower or vice versa or a concentrate. So it's quite remarkable, but it's one of these things that I think cannabis really transcends ages, it transcends cultures, generations. So we found that by offering really high quality versions of each category, we can appeal to that whole cross section of America.
I have so many questions that I'm writing down as I'm listening to you talk, but I think the next place that I want to go is, this podcast is called the Proud to Work in Cannabis Podcast, and we really focus on work and employees and teams. And I saw a great post that you did on your LinkedIn where Forbes wrote an article about projecting 100 million hemp startup Mood. You know, it's just all about you guys. And you retweeted it on your LinkedIn and you said, only possible with our incredible team. I would love to learn a little bit more about the type of team that you've built. And so you and your co-founder launched this. How have you thought about scaling the team over the last 12 months to go from, you know, 0 to 100 in like 18 months? I think that's a lot of entrepreneurs really aspire to this level of scale. And so I'm curious, you know, what teams did you focus on building first? What positions were the most key? And walk us through a little bit about how you've gone about building the team over this first year, because clearly the team is very strong.
Thank you. Yeah, it's truly not a platitude. We are incredibly proud and lucky to be working with the people that they've chosen to work with us. And in the early days, it was, you could kind of break down the company into, okay, you have your products and you have your inventory, you have your advertising, you have your marketing, customer support, operations, and distribution. And in the early days, it was Jake, my co-founder, on all the advertising and marketing, and me on setting up distribution, operations, customer support, and what have you, dealing with a lot of inventory and product sourcing. But the first external hire we really had to make was a warehouse manager. And in our talent pool in Oklahoma City, we found Linda Roadcap, and Linda came from Burris and Cargill, and she'd previously set up and optimized and scaled, you know, massive distribution facilities for you know, these big 3PLs that deal with enterprise brands, and that was an incredible stroke of luck. Truly, Linda is as missionary as they come. She is incredibly smart, incredibly hardworking, and that's really that sort of impetus to find a really smart missionary has really been what's driven the philosophy of scale amongst our team. We want people that are passionate about the mission, much to the name of this podcast. We want people who are proud to work in cannabis. They want to latch onto something, make it theirs. High caliber people that really give a shit. That's who we want. That's who we are, and that's who we want to attract. Towards that end, my time working in the tech industry really imbued in me some great practices around hiring. Sourcing, hiring, onboarding, training, measuring success, how to set realistic but aggressive goals for our team. These are all things that are part of our culture now. So it's that's kind of the start of it. And then over the last 18 months, we've grown our team is right now, I think it's around 165, 170. And within the next 4 to 6 weeks, we will be around 200.
Well, you definitely have to talk to Vanks, because we help our customers find employees, whether they're full-time or hourly gig to hire. So we should definitely talk offline about, you know, you would be a dream client, because we really like to help candidates, especially, you know, I always, like the hourly folks of this industry, which is the majority of the industry, play such a huge piece. And so helping hourly folks go into companies where they can really truly feel like they're part of the team and grow from within is such an awesome opportunity for so many people. I mean, we talk to people who got placed in an entry-level warehouse job, and then within 5 years, they could be running an entire warehouse. And at the pace that you're growing, to be able to talk to somebody who Maybe they didn't go to college, but they are a super hard worker and they're super smart and they're super passionate about the industry and they want to join a company and work hard and have the chance to work their way up. It's like, I heard about someone the other day that he started as a trimmer. Again, he didn't go to college, but he started as a trimmer. And now he said that he's a director of cultivation and he's making more than everybody in his family who actually went to college. And he's like, I just worked harder than everybody. I was the first person to show up in the morning. I was the last one there. I worked my way up every single position, and now I'm running like three huge cultivation facilities. And like, that's possible because of companies in the cannabis industry. And it sounds like there's massive opportunities for people to join your company.
Yeah, absolutely. And there truly is. I mean, I didn't go to college. My co-founder didn't go to college. Our CTO dropped out of college.
I love it.
Yeah. Our CFO has a degree. That's good. It's helpful in a numbers guy, at least a lot more than that. But to your point around,
I don't even know what I was doing at college. I mean, I was starting my first company, a student travel company, and I was using the other students as my customers. You know what I mean? I think that's what I got out of college. But yeah, look, I think it's for some people, but it's super cool to hear that someone like you that didn't go to college is able to build $100 million business, and it should be inspiring to other people. Where do you think you get your entrepreneur drive from?
Probably my father. My father, he went to college, and right out of college, he drove nuclear submarines for the Navy, and then he went into industrial engineering and manufacturing. And then in his 40s, he said, you know what, I've always wanted to be a small business owner. If I don't do it now, it's never going to happen. So he bought a chocolate factory in Maine, and we moved to Maine, and it was a small handcrafted candies, lots of pride, amazing quality ingredients, all the rest of it. And I grew up with that. And I grew up with the notion that it is possible. I have this role model. It is possible to chart your own course. So I've always been fascinated with entrepreneurship. And like I said, I'm very stubborn, and you need that as an entrepreneur. That's for sure. You know, they say an entrepreneur is the only person who's the only personality type who's willing to work 80 or 100 hours a week for themselves instead of working 40 for somebody else. And that's definitely me.
And making, I think it's such a cool concept that, you know, like two summers ago at this time, you were not doing this, and now look at it today. And so the sheer, like, set your mind and visualize something and then go for it, and you don't let anyone or anything get in your way. It's like such a strong force that entrepreneurs who are on a mission, I would never want to bet against them, because there's really nothing stronger than putting your mind to something and not letting anyone or anything stop you.
Absolutely. And there's a veritable graveyard of failed businesses in my wake, learning experiences, you know, some wins, some utter losses, some in-betweens that weren't compelling enough to continue. But the through line is tenacity. And I think any entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur listening really needs to plan on failing myriad times and, getting kicked while they're down, and everything life can throw at you, and you just have to keep going if you want to learn and progress.
I love that. The tenacity, I totally agree, is one of the most important traits for entrepreneurs. Well, from some of you just mentioned that you had some businesses that maybe didn't go exactly as the way that you planned. What are some of the lessons that you've learned in your previous businesses that you've now taken into your new business?
The through line is really going to be, sound funny, but sustainable growth. Not growing. Not
coming from the guy going from zero to 100 million in 12 months.
Yeah, no,
I love it.
Yeah. If you can believe it, we could have grown a lot faster if we were willing to shortcut elements of our infrastructure, elements of our product quality, our customer support. We really could have grown a lot faster than this. But in past businesses, I've seen, when you push something so hard that the wheels fall off, the wheels that are going to fall off are going to primarily be around customer experience, product quality, shipping speed, shipping accuracy, customer support. You just have to give things time to be sustainable. And then towards that end, I think the largest force multiplier to increase your speed of scale, or to increase the speed in which you're capable of scaling, is really the quality of the team that's behind something. For example, say it's customer support. If you have, a B player who's running customer support, then yes, they can scale and they can improve the quality of the customer support. But if you throw in the dimension of speed, they're not going to be able to keep up with the speed that, say, an A player could. So you really need A players that are bought into the mission in order to be able to scale your infrastructure fast.
How did you, and I'm curious if this had anything to do with your previous companies, but I know that you haven't taken on any outside investment capital. How did you decide? Is that as a result of previous experiences, or talk to us about that?
So I was an executive at a YC-backed telehealth company named Fella. And for those unaware, YC is pretty much the Harvard of tech incubators, more unicorns incubated than any other incubator, everything from Twitter to DoorDash to Twitch, et cetera.
Airbnb,
yeah, tons. I was the head of growth from angel through a successful seed. I think they raised 3.5 at post of 15 or 16, somewhere around that magnitude. And on one hand, it's like, all right, cool, millions of dollars in the bank, we've nailed it, let's scale it. On the other hand, I saw just how much time that takes. It's an incredible amount of time and what can be distraction from running the business or growing the business, just needing to raise money. And I've spoken with enough venture-backed entrepreneurs to understand that you give up necessarily a degree of control which can jeopardize the core values upon which you predicated the business in the first place. The grow at all costs, sometimes at the cost of the customer, at the cost of the employees, being asked to do unrealistic things and unrealistic timeframes. I respect venture capitalists. I don't want to have to work with a venture capitalist if I can help it, because I'm stubborn. I want to follow my vision. And not Sequoias.
Yeah, and I think that so many different people have had so many different kinds of experiences with VCs, even people that we've had on our show, right? You talk to some entrepreneurs who found the right partner who let them execute their vision and were supportive and helped make hires and helped make intros and things were great. And then you talk to others who felt like their vision got hijacked and they were suddenly working for a firm. So I totally hear you in that. You know, if you don't have to, why do it? And it sounds like you don't really need to. I'm curious on your take just on the D9 space, right? I mean, do you guys have a lot of competitors, or talk to us about what the landscape is like out there? I feel like it's really kind of starting to explode. So would love just your overall feedback on the space and the category.
Absolutely. I think fundamentally our two biggest competitors are going to be legal marijuana dispensaries and your neighborhood dope man.
What's a neighborhood dope man, would you say?
I'd say the
like
neighborhood
a straight up drug, just like a straight up guy you text and say, hey, give me my product, and they just buy it from the illicit market.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just clarifying. I figured.
No, for sure. Yeah. There's discomfort with both of those options, or there's potential discomfort for millions of people, as we're proving. The marijuana dispensaries, there's all kinds of problems. Sometimes there's a lot of states where there is no easy access to a legal marijuana dispensary. Or if there is, then you need some kind of terminal condition in order to qualify for a card in the first place. There's red tape. And then you go there, and sometimes product quality is significantly lacking. Sometimes the people who work there don't know what they're talking about, or they're just unfriendly. Like sometimes I've been to dispensaries where, you know, you feel like you're the nerdy kid in a middle school cafeteria where, you know, they're judging you for not knowing things. And, you know, there's like a real snobbiness and elitism. Obviously some bed tenders are amazing, but I've seen stores where they're just dour. And then on the other side of the coin, the illicit market, accessing the illicit market. Well, sure. If you're in your 20s or 30s or maybe even 40s, you probably have, you know, a second or third degree connection to somebody, but you don't know what they're giving you. A lot of times those products are being, sometimes the products are coming from, you know, California, Colorado. Sometimes they're coming from Mexican cartels and they're spraying them with God knows what pesticides. There are no testing standards. There could be mold. They're not going to be able to tell you much about the products. They're just going to make up a strain name and sell it to you. And then there's other people who, maybe on the older side, and they don't know anybody, and they just don't have access.
Yeah, they don't know their neighborhood dope man because they're 70.
Neighborhood dope man.
I mean, and also, like, I know that obviously the illicit market is thriving, and most people do have their neighborhood dope guy, but, like, it is pretty scary when you think about it. It's very surprising to me. Obviously, it's just price, but that, I mean, there's people that I know, particularly people in, like, New York, you know, and they're like, why would I go to a legal dispensary when I can text this guy and have product delivered to my doorstep? What about just general, like in a place like New York, like a bodega or just convenience stores? I mean, is that competitive to your business? I mean, I go into these stores and there's, you know, Delta 9 beverages.
Totally. Totally. We're not going after those markets. We've tested in those markets, and by these markets, I mean hyper dense urban locales wherein there's ready access to marijuana, whether it's legal or illegal. Because most of those bodegas in New York, they're unlicensed, and there's been this whole it is crazy. They're starting to crack down on that, but you know, violent crime is spiking so much in New York City that over the last 3-4 years that they're, you know, the bodega that's selling some weed without a license is just, it's not their primary concern, and rightfully so.
Okay. What about, as you know, legislation in the cannabis space, let's assume, cannabis goes from a Schedule 1 drug to a Schedule 3 drug, and potentially something like SAFER comes through, and maybe in the future, full scale legalization. How does that impact your category? And in your mind, you know, what changes at that moment?
Sure. So for those unaware, being that marijuana is a Schedule 1 drug or Schedule 1 substance, they pay taxes the same way that a heroin dealer pays taxes, in that they cannot deduct any business expenses. So they are effectively being taxed at 80%. And when you have a business that's being taxed at 80%.
Which, folks, just for listening, this is 280E. We've had, you know, experts on 280E come in. And so if you haven't listened to some of the podcasts, you should go back and listen to Jeremy Burke and Bo Whitney's episode on Proud to Work in Cannabis, where we talk about how 280E negatively impacts businesses. But, you know, exactly what David just said, you know, it's a big issue. And David doesn't have to pay this tax. But David, keep going. I just wanted to, you know, pump those other episodes.
Absolutely. Of course. So I think over the last 15 or so years, you've seen a lot of money enter the cannabis space in terms of investments. And then you've seen a lot of money leave the space, because everybody was betting that, you know, 15 years ago, everyone was betting that 280E would be repealed or essentially no longer apply due to rescheduling of cannabis or of marijuana a long time ago. And the market has lost patience. And they say these companies are bleeding money and there's no end in sight. So why wouldn't we deploy our capital towards NVIDIA, Google, Fangs, all the rest of it? And I think you've already seen some resurgence of institutional interest in marijuana as the last month has gone by, or last 6 weeks have gone by, and we've seen HHS recommending a rescheduling, and you've seen Safer Banking make significant headwinds. So I think that's really what ends up happening. That's the first step, is institutional money returns to the space, and then you're going to see a lot of saturation, a lot of competition, a lot of big corporates coming in and undercutting smaller companies. You're going to see more state-sanctioned marijuana programs, and everything will get political. And my cynical take on it is that everything will become so hyper-regulated that the only players who can afford to exist will be big corporates, and, you know, marijuana will go that unfortunate direction. But I hope that's not the case. I hope that mom and pops and cannabis purists will always have a market in which to participate. But in terms of what it means for mood, we'll see. I think that we've got such a strong relative first mover advantage in e-commerce that we're really going to own this space. And once marijuana is federally rescheduled and everybody sorts out interstate commerce, transitioning to sell marijuana is on our radar.
Well, look, we're coming up on the last 5 minutes here. A couple more questions for you. For as we get ready to go into 2024, what's in store for Mood, and what's going to be the focus coming out of this incredible growth year that you guys just had?
Tons of scale. Next year we plan to 3x the business. It's going to be
$300 million.
Let's see. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. A lot more team building, a lot of, you know, 100-hour work weeks and all the rest of it. In terms of some interesting product stuff, we've just launched THCA flower, which is, it's a beautiful addition to our product line. Early feedback is tremendous. So we're going to be scaling it to THCA, working on our supply chain a lot more, and ensuring continuity of supply, continuity of quality. And then on the gummy side, for the last 6 months or so, we've been in R&D producing functional gummy SKUs that are really innovative. We'll be launching those in Q4 of this year, probably the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and then leaning really heavy into functional gummies in 2024. Functions such as we have gummies coming out for menopause symptom relief, menstrual relief, testosterone boosting. Sexual Euphoria, which is going to be a fantastic one because we sure think that cannabis makes sex a lot more fun, and it'd be amazing to capture that lightning in the bottle of a gummy form.
Wow. Wow, so you've got a lot going on the product front too. Do you happen to be going to MJ Biz in November?
Katie, our director of strategic projects, is.
Oh, cool. We'll have to look out for her there. And if people want to get in touch with you, want to get in touch with the business, want to learn about job opportunities or just shop your products or just talk to somebody, what's the best way for them to get in touch with all of you guys?
So anybody can check us out at hellomood.co. And if they're interested in contacting us, potentially about job opportunities or just keeping up with us, our LinkedIn page is going to be the best way of doing that.
Awesome. David, well, thank you so much. I'm excited to have you on in a year. I just made a note of it. You have to come back on in a year so we can catch up on 2024. I can't wait to hear how it goes. And I'm hoping that we'll get the chance to work together and maybe Vanx can even help you find a couple people.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much for having me on. And I look forward to our catch up in a year as well.
Sounds great. Have a great day, David. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.